Welcome to Beyond Leading, the podcast that cuts through the noise to get real about leadership, team dynamics, personal growth, and the messy, brilliant reality of work, life, and everything in between. Each episode brings grounded insights, sharp truths, and honest conversations with experienced leaders and coaches as we explore what it really takes to lead well today. We don't deal in one-size-fits-all answers. We spark ideas, offer grounded perspectives, and create space for you to work out what fits your world. So let's get into it. The topic that we're looking at today is team leadership. We're going to take a deep dive into what team leadership is all about. What does team leadership mean as a topic?
Oh, that's a good question.
It all starts with trust. You know, there's no trust between people. Can be two, can be six people. If there's no trust, there's no leadership, there's no team. It's a group of individuals doing their own thing and disappointing each other in their expectations.
I'd add respect to that as well. I think trust is definitely the cornerstone of it all. And I think that there needs to be an element of respect, because even if they don't like each other, if they respect each other, you can get the team to work very efficiently together.
One of the leadership styles that quite often gets put under the microscope is the micromanager.
That's not a leader, that's a manager.
Okay, thank you. So we've got the difference made there already, that a micromanager is not a leader.
No.
Excellent. Can you expand on that a little bit for us, Ellen?
Because if you have leadership, you trust other people on their expertise to do things to a good standard. And you take care of them. You protect them if they make mistakes, but you don't micromanage them. You don't tell them what to do. You use their expertise.
And you value. And I think you value the individual. I think that's the thing with a leader. Not only do you trust them to be able to do the job, but you value the individuality that they bring to it.
Okay, that's brilliant. So our conversation so far has been kind of taking a look at looking towards the team from the leadership position. But let's talk about the leader. What qualities does the leader bring to leadership? What would you expect to see in a good leader?
It's interesting, because I think leaders have changed. Leaders are changing. Traditionally, they were much more aggressive, maybe. They were more fear-based, whereas now we're moving into a style of leadership that's more based around empathy. People are expecting empathic leaders. They're expecting their leaders to listen. They're expecting their leaders to involve them in the process, not to just bark orders at
them. To create a safe space.
Yeah.
Create a safe space. But that's very cultural. If you go to the Eastern Europe countries, it's still very old-fashioned. They love to work by taking orders. Where we are in Western Europe, we don't take orders, right?
Yeah.
We have an opinion, and we need to voice our opinion, and we are allowed to voice our opinion. And old-fashioned leadership, well, not really leadership, you got punished if you didn't follow orders, you know, got laid off or whatever.
Right. So traditional leadership was quite hierarchical. It was respecting of the position in a kind of a fearful way, if I kind of replay something that Tiffany just said a moment ago. Whereas what we see often nowadays in business, and I would reflect on working with US tech companies over the last 20 or 30 years, these are much more kind of merit-based environments where everybody has a voice, everybody can voice that, their opinions about things, and the hierarchy counts for kind of less.
And in fact, it's interesting because I have the amazing opportunity of working with a variety of different organizations, quite large organizations, and a lot of them are becoming far more flat in structure, which I think is a major shift. Before it was very much the sort of the pyramid, and now it's very flat. It has its challenges. However, the younger generation that's coming in is really demanding that they become involved in the whole process. rightly or wrongly. That's another conversation to have, the generational gaps. However, this is the shift that we're seeing.
Right. What about a leader that is trying to shift from that more conventional leadership hierarchical approach to something which is more current? How could we help them?
Well, you always start with personal leadership, right? That's where it all starts. If you take a good look, have self-awareness, because you cannot change other people. That's creating your own disappointment.
Right.
Or who do you want to be? Do you want to be a servant leader? Because, you know, servant leadership in companies is big, but not it will not fit any company. If you have a lower educated workforce, they work, you know, in a factory, they need orders. So if you do servant leadership, it might go downhill fast.
Right.
So you cannot just choose what kind of leadership you want in company. It starts with the leader who he or she is, and self-awareness and development. So whenever I work with a team, I always start with the one giving me the assignment. We start with you. You need to participate. You need to do the same thing that the whole team does. Otherwise, I won't take the assignment.
Yeah.
Because you cannot tell my team needs to develop. You need to. Well, I don't need to do anything because you tell me. I need to change first. I'll take a good look at myself. Be an example.
Yeah.
Because it's not just about respect. It's about acceptance. Accepting others for what they're good at and not trying to change them into something that would be convenient for you.
Mm-hmm. And you can see, I mean, you know, a very simple example is if you go into a restaurant and the waiters are a little bit snotty with you, you can be sure that it's because their managers are being like that with them.
Oh, yeah.
So the attitude comes from the top down. So, you know, what Ellen is saying about starting with the top. And it's very difficult, you know, a leader who's trying to change their style with their team, if they've got resistance from above, it makes their job very, very difficult. If they've got a senior leadership or a C-suite, let's say, that's still traditional, it's very difficult for those other managers underneath to become more empathetic.
Absolutely.
Right. So it sounds as though they're in talking about the leader themselves needing to be self-aware, self-controlling, you know, rather than controlling of others, we start to drift towards the topic of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Leaders, is a leader prepared to be vulnerable, to show themselves vulnerable?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
I think it's super important.
The most important.
Because I think that goes back to what Ellen was saying. Vulnerability builds trust.
Yep.
Right.
And this is what was missing before. It's like everybody was told that the emotions had to stay at home. Do not bring emotions into the office. Fine. The problem is that by leaving emotions at home, the leaders at the time became emotionless. And it was very difficult then to deal with people. People are emotional beings. It doesn't matter what we're told to be. We are emotional beings. So now we're being told that we can bring our emotions in. So it's now finding that sort of that balance of nobody wants their leader to break down in tears every time they have a team meeting. However, showing that they understand, showing that they have, you know, have the emotions, showing their vulnerability, being open to sharing, being human, I think.
Yeah. But at the same time, if that is not in your top talents, if you're not having empathy, you can learn, but it does not come overnight. You see, because if we're not brought up that way, don't show emotions. And emotions are not just tears or being upset. You know, that is also being out loud, being very happy, it's a whole spectrum. And people who are not high in empathy always connect empathy to tears, you know, females being very sensitive. That's old-fashioned thinking. We men need to be, you know, strong and don't show emotions. But emotions are a whole spectrum. It's a whole spectrum of to tears.
And there are emotions that we feel, but then there are emotions that we express. And I think therein lies, you know, I might feel panic but not show it.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I might feel panic and express maybe through words or through facial expressions that I'm feeling vulnerable. I'm feeling a bit out of my depth. But that doesn't necessarily imply weakness.
No. But it's still connected in society, in companies, to weakness. At least the person who is suppressing all that thinks he needs to suppress that because it's weak.
Yeah.
It's weak, show my emotions. Well, on the other hand, if you have a team, a team is a group of people achieving something.
A common goal.
Yeah, yeah. So it's okay to not know it all. But that's the first step.
That's
just admitting, I don't know it all. Please help me. We all need help. We all need trust. We all need to be heard.
And I think this is one of the things, because you have, when you have people shifting from that kind of position of doing to a position of leading, there is that transition of when you are a doer, you are the expert in what you're doing. That's why you're there. You're good at what you do. That's why you're chosen. When you go to be a leader, you're not the expert anymore. You can't be the expert of everybody on the team. You have to be able to lead people.
Well, the main goal is to create a safe space for everybody to be the best version of themselves on their expertise.
Yeah. So just to take that thought, though, a person who's, let's say, a good practitioner who gets promoted, may well, they are still a good practitioner, but the role has changed, the expectation has changed. And making that transition can be really tough when you know exactly how the job should be done. You know how to show somebody how it should be done. Maybe that will help them to improve their performance. But you can't just keep stepping in and doing the job. You have to let the other person grow. And that's leadership, isn't it?
Well, and you know where it starts going wrong. You know how to do the job, but that is coming from your talents, your way of doing it. Somebody else can do the same job, but do it in a different way.
As well. So,
as well. On their talents, we all have different talents to reach our goals. And if you can't give somebody the space to do it their way because you're too afraid they will make a mistake, you're lacking leadership. You're still micromanaging.
But the thing is, there's a lot of people who, when they go up, they're not the leader of that one particular role. They're a leader of several roles of which they're not experts in.
Right.
And this is where there's that shift of feeling vulnerable, because they feel that there's a gap in their knowledge, and they feel that they need to be able to answer every question across everybody's roles that they're leading. And that's not the case. You're not there to be the expert of everything. You're there to lead your team. And I think that's something that it's understanding the people who you're working with. It's understanding the bigger picture. And so this is what comes to my mind, which is a bit weird, but let's go with it. So when you're a doer, okay, when you're an expert in your field, you're a piece of the puzzle. When you're a manager, you've got the cover. You know what the puzzle looks like.
Now, I like the way you've put that. So when we talk about somebody being a good leader, a strong leader, we've already touched on a few things there: the willingness to be vulnerable, the ability to respect others and trust others for what they do, the reluctance to actually step in and take over because that doesn't trust the team, does it?
I'm just going to jump in and say maybe not reluctance, but the control.
Okay.
The understanding of all the team members, why they respond in the way they respond, when they get upset, you know, when they get loud, whatever. What are their talents? And maybe they're better at something that is your job, but it's easy for them because it's in their talent spectrum and it's not yours. It's a numbers, actually, in company, it's a numbers game. It will save you time if you know what your team members are good at. And it's not about their job title, the content of their job. It's about the way they go about it on their talents. And if somebody in your team is high on communication or adaptability and you are not, and there's, you know, a message that is not a good one for the team, you can ask that team member, you are the good one to put it into words. It's not my talent. Can you help me out? Because that will save FTEs, that will save money, that will save working hours for a company, because the one that's high on communication will have it done in 30 minutes in preparation. And somebody who has it in his weaknesses, communication, and a lot of leaders have that. It's an assumption that they're great communicators. And it will take them hours and hours where they could have done something that would benefit the company, where they're good at, and ask somebody else, can you prepare the speech? Can you do the talking? Because you can so easily put it into the right words and get on stage when we have a town hall or whatever and put it into words, because that is really a strong team effort. The CEO telling a team member, putting somebody else on stage and giving that message, because the message you're sending is, I'm not telling it, the team, we agree on it, and this team member will tell it what C-suit, if it's a C-suit, actually means. That is.
So what does that do for the individual? A lot of what we've talked about has been about, you know, the respect in a team. We've looked at things from the leader looking down at the team, and I don't mean down in a hierarchical sense, but the leader looking at the team. But what about the individual team members now, in terms of what you've said, you know, playing to their strengths and so forth?
Being seen and being heard. That's the basics everybody in life needs, whether it's a team or it's in personal life. You don't always have to agree with somebody, but at least you know that you've been listened to. That is key. It makes somebody proud. I was put on stage because they trust me that I can do the job on my talents.
And also, I think for the individual, when they're seen and they're heard, you can deliver bad news and they remain engaged.
Yeah.
Because they're part of the whole process. So, you know, if you've got a team, you're working together, you know, there's a lot of respect, there's a lot of communication, everybody is there, and their strengths are being maximized, their potential is being maximized. And you're saying, we're coming up to a quarter now that's going to be tough, blah, 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 whatever. You'll find that the people are not going to run away. They're going to be like, okay, they'll dig in. What can we do? It becomes a we rather than an I.
It has to be a we to make it successful.
Yeah.
Right. So what about some of the weaknesses that we need to avoid? I think we've kind of been looking at, you know, what strengths there are, how to lead a team and so forth. What would be, if for anybody that's listening to this in the future, what would you say some of the kind of real weaknesses that need to be avoided? They might feel like they're natural to us, you know, that we need to do these things because they come to us naturally. But what should we avoid?
I think the top one is, don't feel that you have to have all the answers. I think that's the first one, because especially if you're new to a role, you might feel that you have to come in with all of the knowledge, and you don't.
Don't focus on weaknesses. It's a negative. Focus on strength. The only focus, that is, we all know what we're not good at. Mm-hmm. But if we're asked to work on our weaknesses, we're not productive. And we're not, it is not inspiring. It's not productive. So
it's not motivating.
Know your weaknesses, never focus on them. And still companies do that, right? In the annual talks, they what you need to be better at. No, tell somebody what they're good at. And they for sure will change the conversation. Well, thank you, but I need to do this and that better. People know themselves, but if you focus on weaknesses, you're getting nowhere. Productivity is gone. So don't even talk about weaknesses.
Yeah, we talked earlier a little bit about self-awareness in the leader, but I think self-awareness in every member of the team is key. You know, you talk about weaknesses there. We can't be universally good at everything.
No.
There will be some things that we're excellent at. There'll be some things that we're competent at, but there'll be some things that really cause us frustration. And so we need to learn how to not be frustrated by those things, but that still won't make them a strength.
But the thing is, in understanding, I think in understanding what you are good at and understanding that it's okay for a leader to make mistakes. Just as the leader is creating a safe space for the team, they're creating a safe space for themselves. Again, it's leading by example. You know, guys, I messed up. I thought this was going to work. It didn't pan out. I didn't foresee this. whatever it is, we need to pivot. That's fine. So understanding that we're all human, that we're all very, very good at different things. Avoid micromanaging. If you want to avoid something, don't. You'll micromanage a whole team out of their jobs, because nobody wants to be handled, managed like that. It stifles potential. It stifles motivation. And you know, if you want to micromanage it, then fire your team and do it yourself. You know,
tend to do anyway.
That's the thing.
And then, you know, accuse the team of not working too hard. I always say, when you all go home and check on your work, and the team will get even lazier. And when you ask them, they will tell you, well, why should we do a perfect job? Because he's going to check, he or she's going to check us anyway. He or she does not trust us enough to do a good job.
So what's
the sometimes
point?
Good is good enough. Not everything has to be perfect.
Perfect, but that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah. Well, you know, the conversation that we're having here, it reminds me, I hope you don't mind me sharing a personal experience. I did a bit of contracting, interim management, for a national charity here in the UK, large charity, £130 million a year, and I was interim head of supporter relations. The atmosphere when I went in was pretty poor, because there had been this micromanagement that had taken place. About 4 weeks in, I made a mistake. I actually advertised a post. There was a change of salary banding that was going to come through, and I looked ahead and actually advertised for some vacant positions at the new banding. Yeah. And never thought that I needed to communicate it to the team that I was taking a flyer in anticipation it would attract candidates. They thought that they were stuck on one banding and the new people coming in were going to be on a higher banding. Right. But I showed my vulnerability. I said, guys, I'm sorry, mea culpa. I should have told you what was going on. I didn't. I didn't mean to cause upset. What was interesting about it was that trust immediately grew.
Yeah.
And that for me was a kind of a foundation piece put in place. I was only there for 9 months. That was only ever the plan. I was never going to be permanent. But during the 9 months, things changed dramatically. The culture, the atmosphere changed, because there was that willingness to be vulnerable, willingness to admit to a mistake.
Mm-hmm. So you learn from mistakes. You only learn from mistakes.
Yeah.
And you only get connection after making a real mistake. If you enter into a team that is not a trusting team, and you make a mistake and you're the first one to admit it, it opens up a whole new perspective on the whole team.
Yeah.
Because people don't leave bad jobs. I mean, it's that old cliche, isn't it? They don't leave bad jobs, they leave bad leaders.
Absolutely.
There's no such thing as a bad job. If you're getting your paycheck at the end of the month, that's really all the job is. But if you're having to go in and deal with, I had a client yesterday who was saying, you know, when I came into this job, the scope was X, Y, and Z. The company policy is I go from my position to the next one, and then I take my boss's job. Now they've changed all of that. So they're actually bringing someone into that interim position there, which is blocking them from moving up. And she said, and my whole scope of work has changed, and now the whole trust thing is gone. And so you go with that.
Yeah. But then communication's key. You know, we talked about communication earlier. You know, that when the route changes, when the goalposts move, then the art of communication in business is one that's sadly lacking. Communication for a lot of leaders is, well, didn't you read the email?
Yeah. Didn't you get the memo?
Yeah. But then how did you interpret the memo? Because am I a great communicator? Did my message get a go? Did I check? What did you hear me say? What did you understand? And you'll be surprised that six members will have a different truth on what actually has been said. And they're doing their job based on the assignment they have. And they bring a result. And then the boss is so disappointed because nobody did what he or she asked. Because they did not check, you know, repeat to me, what did you hear me say? And you will be so surprised.
So there's not checking. There's that check-in about understanding. You know, did you get the memo? Did you understand?
Yeah.
We had the conversation. Are you clear on what we're going to do next? Mm-hmm. So leadership is around making sure that everybody knows. They may not be, you know, kind of completely behind it in the sense that it wouldn't be their chosen route, but at least they accept that it is the route that we're going down and we're all in it together.
Yeah. Ellen gave me a great example yesterday. So she uses a tool with all of the teams that she's training, and that's that she gives them all a piece of paper. She asks them to close their eyes, listen to the instructions that she's giving. All right. So the instructions are fold the paper in half, fold the
You're not allowed to ask questions.
No questions. No questions. Just listen.
Yep.
Not you. You can ask questions, obviously. and they have to listen to the instructions. That's all they have to do. Listen to the instructions and follow them. And she said that you never have two people who come out with the same piece of paper. Because what they're hearing, you know what you're saying, but you don't know what the other person is hearing. So you have to check in.
Good. I think that's excellent.
Different results. You know, fold it in half, fold the left top down.
Simple, simple
things. They all did the same instructions.
All different. Yeah.
So if they could have asked questions, I could have given exact instructions. And they all did what was being asked. So that's the point of communication, asking questions. You can never ask enough questions.
Right. But then there's a style of question asking, isn't there? And I'm thinking about the way the boss asks the team a question, the way team members ask each other or the boss a question. We can vary the style and we can either sound confrontational or we can sound inquiring.
The what, why, how questions. So if I said to you, Nick, why did you decide to choose this subject, you're going to feel a little
bit. The tone of your voice, your facial
even just the why, even why. It's like, why? It's like you have to justify yourself.
It's an excruciation. Why did you do that?
Why did you do that?
Explain yourself.
Whereas if I said to you, you know, how did you come to the decision? You're going to give me a very methodical answer. Well, you know, well, we had a podcast with Alec and we were discussing this and that. And you're going to give me the steps of how you got there. If I say to you, what led you to deciding to discuss leadership more in depth, then you're going to think about it.
Yeah.
So what, why, how questions in all communication with all relationships.
You don't want me to answer that question now, do you?
No.
Well, you could.
Put it in a memo.
Okay. But then if I asked you to close your eyes, then actually the answer that each of you gave me might be different because you folded the paper in a different
way. I just had a conversation with somebody around relationships in general. And, you know, and I was like, yeah, but, you know, and then so I'll take that and I'll go off and I'll think about it. And I'm going, but what are you thinking about? Because you haven't clarified what it is that's been said. You're thinking about what you've heard, your interpretation. Yeah. And we all interpret things through, like, the lens of our life.
Yeah, good. So I'm conscious that we're coming to the time. Do you think there are any aspects of this deep dive into team leadership that we should have talked about today? Or do you think we've kind of, you know, obviously deep dives come from actually intimate knowledge in a particular context? And we don't know the context of anybody listening today, but are there any aspects of team leadership that you think we ought to have covered?
I think that is very personal to whoever is listening. If you're first listening to a podcast like this, it's already an overload of information.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you take it any deeper, you should do it on a personal level.
Got it.
If somebody is triggered by this, listening to this conversation, say, I need, you know, some coaching or some more insights in how I should do that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you. So the last question is, what would be your tip? What would be your piece of advice that you would give anybody that is looking to dive deeper into good team leadership or to change an aspect of their leadership or their boss's leadership? What would be your one piece of advice?
You know, I didn't know what I was going to say until you said all their bosses' leadership.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think if your leadership is all about managing down and managing up, all right, it's that flow. So for me, it's going to have to be communication. It's going to have to be, you know, make sure that what you're saying is what is being heard. Don't be afraid to ask questions when you're managing up. Make sure that you communicate up when things, you know, when things are going right and when things are going wrong. Communicate up. Same when you're coming down. Just, you know, keep those channels open. That would be my
And change starts with yourself.
Yeah.
Always. If you want a different result, you cannot ask your boss to change.
But you can try, but it won't work.
Well, you can try, but create your own disappointment.
And I think the one tip I would add is that listening is really key in leadership.
Yeah, but listening.
And I think especially...
Not listening.
Sorry, Ellen, say that again.
What I'm exactly not doing now is my tip. It's listening to hear and not listening to respond.
Yeah. Listen. Yeah.
And I did the opposite right now, right? That is what you don't want. I'm so sorry.
No, not at all. But I think listening is key because I think through listening we actually engage, and that's kind of across generations, it's across genders, it's across cultures. So listening is really important for us.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll call a halt to things today. It's been lovely talking to you both. Thank you very much for the conversation today. I've really enjoyed it. And, we'll have another topic for the next episode.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Beyond Leading. If this episode was useful, follow or subscribe so you don't miss the next one, and share it with someone who'd appreciate it. And if you've got a minute, a quick rating or review really helps more people find the show.